Well, good morning, and I have to tell you, I'm not Dr. Lederer quite yet. My name is Elisa Lederer. I'm actually a third-year doctoral student and associate instructor at Indiana University Bloomington, but I like the sound of that. And we are unfortunately going to have to return from South Africa, but I'd like to bring you back to college. And so I will be talking with you all about the utilization of CAM-based stress management practices among college students. And I do want to acknowledge my co-authors. Unfortunately, Ellen Koh and Dr. Susan Mittelstadt couldn't be here today, but Dr. Jeannie Johnson is right there towards the back, and I just want to thank you and my other co-authors for their valuable contribution to this study. Okay, so I have nothing to disclose, and I do also want to acknowledge that we were able to do this study because of an initial grant by the school to Dr. Ruth Gassman, so we are grateful for that. Okay, so I know that I don't have to talk about CAM and introduce CAM to you all, but I do want to talk for a moment about stress and why we focus on college students. So stress has been associated among all populations with all types of negative health outcomes. So increased susceptibility to the common cold, to negative mental health outcomes, less medication adherence, increased risk for obesity. So we know that this is an important issue that needs to be addressed. Now, among college students specifically, the National College Health Assessment, which is one of the largest college health studies that we know of, in that study, over 50% of college students reported that they had an above-average perceived level of stress in the past year. And so for college students, stress isn't just negatively impacting their physical health, but their academic performance as well. So among 31 possible health issues, students actually ranked stress as their number one impediment to academic success, with about 30% of students reporting that stress had negatively impacted their academics in the past 12 months. So when we think of CAMS as a stress management technique, this is what we do now. So according to the National Health Interview Survey, which is the 2000 national data set that's given us our prevalence estimates, which is the best we know so far, about 38% of U.S. adults, so this was everyone over the age of 18, reported using one of 21 CAM therapies just at least once in the past 12 months. But the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, in their strategic plan, has called to increase understanding of real-world patterns and outcomes of the use of complementary health approaches. And so when we think of college students as a particular population and as sort of a traditional age group, in that national data set, it does go 18 to 29, but we don't know about college students in particular. And so this is a gap in the literature that we wish to explore. So this led to the following research questions, the first being, to what extent do college students use CAM strategies for stress management? And then, are there differences within the collegiate subpopulations that use these strategies? And then finally, do health outcomes differ between those students that use CAM strategies versus those who don't? So the way that we were able to explore this was actually through secondary data analysis of a pre-existing study. So this was a study that was done at our institution in fall of 2009, and it was among undergraduate students who were either enrolled or made a formal indication that they wished to enroll in a public Midwestern school of health, physical education, and recreation with a response pool of over 1,000 students. And I will say that this study was not specific to CAM. It wasn't specific to stress. It actually had 136 items, so it was the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and anything you can think of related to college health. But the measure that we were particularly interested in was this measure that asked, once you are feeling stressed, what types of activities do you participate in to relieve stress? So you can see that the response options had multiple different items and categories ranging from physical activity to more social-based activities, negative health behaviors, and then the ones that we were particularly interested in were the CAM-based strategies, so yoga, tai chi, deep breathing meditation, and guided imagery. And we selected those as CAM strategies based on what the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine and our national data sets are defining as CAM. Okay, and in terms of the overall participant demographics, they were fairly representative of the school itself, but you'll see that we did have more females than males, and our freshmen were somewhat underrepresented. We did have a primarily white sample, which is reflective of the demographics at the school. And how we went about our analyses is that we did run descriptive statistics, frequencies, cross-tabulations, and t-tests in SPSS looking for significance. You'll notice that as I move forward, the ends are just a little bit different depending on the variable. This was self-report. Not everyone reported particular variables of interest, which is why these ends do differ just a bit in terms of the total n. And that you'll also see that we looked at several different variables. And so for the brevity of reporting and ease of understanding, you'll see that I've only dug into the ones that were statistically significant. Okay, so in response to the first research question, to what extent do college students use CAM strategies for stress management? This is what we found. So this is a list, just if anyone's curious, of all the different strategies and their frequencies, seeing that sleep was number one with 70% of students reporting that they use this. But of course, we're most interested in these five strategies. And with the exception of deep breathing, which was somewhat in the middle, with about 28% of students reporting that they had used this, and unfortunately, we see that our CAM strategies of yoga, meditation, guided imagery, and Tai Chi were the lowest of all of the CAM stress management strategies that were used. And in case anybody's curious, we also wanted to compare this to the national data. Now, this is of all adults, but you can actually see that it's somewhat similar, with the exception that our students are reporting more deep breathing. But actually, the percentages are somewhat similar between our data set and the national data set. And then we looked at the students who reported using CAM in general. So this was one or more strategies. And this was about 35% of our sample reported using CAM, which is also somewhat similar to the national data set as well, which is particularly interesting given that these were five strategies and there were 21 in the national data set. So then we looked to see, well, are the people who are using CAM, are they more likely to use additional CAM strategies? And we did find that the majority within the sample were just using one, with some using two, and then less and less using three of the strategies, four of the strategies, five strategies. So this led us for the rest of our reporting and analysis and reporting to decide to dichotomize by CAM users and non-CAM users, with the CAM users being the students who used one or more strategy, and the non-CAM users, those being those students who reported using none of these five. Okay, so this leads to our second research question, which collegiate subpopulations utilize these strategies for stress management? So these were the variables that we looked at. We looked at gender, which was statistically significant. So these percentages are the column totals. They show the overall composition of the users and the non-users. But the take-home with this is that our females were reporting significantly more CAM usage than our males. We looked at class. We looked at race, which because of the small numbers of students of color, we did dichotomize by white and non-white. Similar with sexual orientation, we had smaller numbers of students reporting being gay, lesbian, bisexual, or questioning, so we dichotomized by major, by parental level of education. There wasn't a significant relationship between any of these demographic variables except for gender. So then we looked by lifestyle variables. So despite perhaps perceptions of higher levels of spirituality among those who use CAM, at least in our among our population, there wasn't a significant relationship. And there also wasn't for students who reported attending religious services in the past month, those who were members of fraternities or sororities, if they had membership in a campus club, the amount of volunteer hours they had a week. But what was significant was the number of hours they worked per week. So the students who were working more than 20 hours a week were more likely to use CAM than the students who were working less than 20 hours a week. So then we wanted to see, well, are there differences in the types of health behaviors that our students are practicing? And we actually found quite a number of significant variables here. So we did see that there were significant differences by CAM users versus non-CAM users for the servings of fruits and vegetables per day, with our CAM users eating more fruits and vegetables. The number of days eating breakfast in the 7 days, which has been associated with positive health outcomes, the more often people are eating breakfast, they were eating breakfast on more days. The minutes of physical activity in the past 7 days, our CAM users were reporting more physical activity, and we created a composite of several different health-seeking behaviors. And so our CAM users were engaging in health-seeking behaviors more so than our non-CAM users. And then the only health behavior which there wasn't a significant relationship for was condom use during last sexual intercourse, in which the percentages were quite similar. Which led to our last research question. So do health outcomes differ between the college students who use CAM strategies and the students who don't? So first we looked at physical health status, general health status, and we found that there was not a significant relationship between any of these variables, reporting general health status, the number of days of poor physical health in the last month, and overall life satisfaction. There wasn't a significant relationship with any of these variables. However, when we looked at mental health status, there were significant differences, and I don't want anyone to throw anything at me, but we were surprised to see that that the students who were using CAM were actually reporting poor mental health outcomes. Okay, so we saw that with a perceived stress score, so this was a composite of several different stress-related questions, our students were reporting more stress, who are CAM users, and the number of days with poor mental health in the past month were more days, and both of these were significant. Okay, so before I move further, I do want to mention that there are a few limitations that we need to consider in interpreting these data. So, you know, obviously there are several more CAM strategies that unfortunately, given that this is secondary data analysis, we weren't able to look at. This was self-report, so certainly we hope that our students were answering honestly and reading the question thoroughly, but with any self-reported data, we don't know for sure. The generalizability, this is a potential issue. This was at one institution, and within that institution at a school of students who were quite likely more interested and invested in health. And also the descriptive design, which I'll talk more about in a minute. You know, we really aren't able to tease out this relationship between CAM use and health outcomes because of the descriptive nature of the study. Okay, so our conclusions based on our research questions are that, you know, a third of students report using CAM to reduce stress. However, these strategies were the least utilized among our whole list of potential stress reduction methods. We did find few differences between collegiate subpopulations, with the exception that we did have more females reporting CAM use than males. And this difference between those reporting over 20 hours of work hours a week versus less than 20 hours. So on the one hand, these are potentially our busiest students. They're you know, they're so busy with work, and some of these strategies are perhaps even more time intensive, and yet these are the students that are reporting using them. So that's quite interesting. Also, our students who use CAM strategies are reporting, in general, healthier behaviors than our students who are not using CAM strategies. And it seems to be that CAM is not associated with physical health, but there is some type of association with mental health. So how do we move forward from here? Clearly, we would like to see additional investigation between this relationship between perceived stress and health outcomes. This was unanticipated for us. You know, we know that there is a wealth of literature that reports the many benefits of all of these particular strategies. And yet, we're seeing that the students who use these strategies have worse mental health outcomes. So possibly it's the chicken and the egg argument, right? So maybe it's that the students who have more stress to begin with are also more likely to be the ones that use CAM strategies. And so perhaps our CAM strategies are actually working quite well, but because these students started out with a higher level of stress, they end with a bit of a higher level of stress compared to the general population. But we don't know for sure, so that is definitely an area of further research. And also, assuming that we do want to continue promoting these strategies among college students, they are the least utilized. And so the next step for that would be to really understand what the determinants of use of these strategies are. What are the reasons that students would engage in CAM strategies? What are the reasons that they wouldn't? And once we have a better understanding of the underlying belief factors that would lead students to engage in these strategies or not, we can use those in order to develop interventions and communication strategies. So with that, I'm open to any questions, and thank you for your time.